Welcome back. We're joined by Patrick Poole, one of the preeminent thinkers and commentators and analysts of the state of counterterrorism, if I can use that expression. I think of it rather as counter-jihad. He has been writing on these issues and investigating them and consulting to law enforcement and the military for many years. Currently, he is the national security reporter for PJ Media. But you can find his writings at other places like American Thinker, Front Page Magazine, Breitbart News, and elsewhere. Patrick, it's always good to have you with us. Welcome back.
Thanks, Frank.
I guess the place to start is by getting your sense, Patrick, as to what happened last week that resulted in the murder of four American Marines and one naval petty officer at a recruiting center. And the fact that, as of this speaking, at least this interview, we are continuously told the United States government cannot figure out what the motive for those attacks was.
Well, Frank, when I heard the news back on Thursday and, the subject's identity, Mohammed Yusuf Abdulaziz, was identified by authorities, my first thought was, here we are all over again. And, this attack was basically a copycat of the attack on the Little Rock recruiting station back in 2009 that killed Army Private Andy Long. And then you had the Fort Hood massacre, where again all these hand wringing and whatever might be Major Nadal Hassan's motive, and then a couple days later we get his PowerPoint presentation, which he was delivered some 20 some odd times, where he basically lays out the justification for killing his own soldiers. So, and we look at those two previous incidents and all the other terror plots that targeted military both, abroad and here at home. And, I ask myself after this most recent incident, what has really changed? And honestly, there's nothing that's changed after these other terror attacks that have cost American lives at military facilities and recruiting centers. And, here we are all over again. And it almost seems like both the political establishment and the media establishment are doing everything to bury this story, within a couple days news cycle.
I was listening last night, I think it was to NPR, and they were fulminating for the umpteenth time about Ferguson and the attack that took place there. A police officer was responding with force to some rather problematic behavior on the part of an individual. And we've been over this again and again and again. It's caused riots. It's caused all kinds of disturbances and public policy debate and so on. And yet we seem to be unable or unwilling to have a serious conversation about what's going on here, where we have not just an incident or a particularly difficult interaction between the police and a citizen, but we have jihad being waged against us. We have war now taking place here in America. What do you make of the differences in treatment of these two very serious issues?
Well, the contrast is day and night. We see how the media is treating the this Chattanooga attacker, Mohammed Abdulaziz, and then just a couple weeks ago, how they handled the Dylann Roof Charleston shooting, where nine people died, and they had. Coming up with all kinds of boogeymen, Confederate flag and Southern culture. And despite the fact what we saw after the Charleston shooting was, I think, a testament to how far America has come, in the past 50 years on the matter of civil rights. And, there was a unity and, kind of mutual condemnation of the attack and the ideas that motivated it. And then you have this situation in Chattanooga, where the media seems insistent on trying to hype a narrative that this had nothing to do with ideology, and it had everything to do with the fact that he was taking drugs and he was depressed, and you know, nothing about him traveling to Jordan and Yemen, nothing about the fact that he texted his one of his friends just hours before the attack a Quranic verse about declaring war against, you know, those who've shown enmity to his friends. Nothing about his two blog posts, which highlighted the fact that the companions of Muhammad fought, quote, jihad for the sake of Allah. And none of these things. And more recently, ABC News has reported that he, in his diary, he had talked about becoming a martyr going back to 2013. And yet all of this evidence, which in one light, I mean, just screams with motive, particularly his trips abroad, and yet the media completely wants to discount that and spin up this fictional, you know, well, he was just, you know, he was just a troubled youth story, in contrast to what we saw with the Charleston shooter.
Yeah, no, exactly. Patrick Poole, again, is our guest. He is a superb national security analyst and reporter now with PJ Media. And Patrick, you've been following these things very closely for a long time. In fact, I think some of your work, particularly on debunking the notion that these shooters are, or other assailants are somehow lone wolves disconnected from this ideology and unmoved by its commands. And I'm speaking, of course, of Sharia as the ideology and the command being to wage jihad, whether as an individual or otherwise. This, speaking of motive, what is it, in your judgment, that is causing both the press and, more importantly, perhaps, the government of the United States to mischaracterize or simply ignore what's going on here?
Well, it doesn't fit with the narrative that the administration has been pushing going back to the beginning of the administration, where Obama went to Cairo and gave his speech at Al-Azhar and talked about engaging the Islamic world and the suppression of any discussion of Islamic ideology or Sharia with respect to how these threats evolve and turn operational, and contrast that with British Prime Minister David Cameron, who just this week gave, I think, what is an important speech, where he said, look, you know, we've got to start getting our hands around the ideology. 2 weeks ago, Obama said, you know, we've got to start waging a war of ideas. But point in fact is, as we know, Frank, this administration has banned any discussion of ideology. Quentin Lichtorowicz, the president's top advisor on radicalization, has said publicly that discussion of Islamic ideology in terms of identifying the threat, according to him, was a violation of the First Amendment separation of church and state, and that we had to outsource our understanding and all of our operations to our Muslim partners around the world, which is just, I mean, a very bizarre reading of, First Amendment jurisprudence. But just in practical terms, it's just utter insanity. These countries that he wants to outsource our counterterrorism and counter-radicalization function to are the countries who've been absolutely unable to deal with the problem themselves.
Yeah, in some cases, they are the engines behind it, in point of fact. We're going to talk more about that with Patrick Poole and how that has really informed and shaped this so-called countering violent extremism program promoted by President Obama and, I think, at least unless I've missed something, Patrick, David Cameron's government, too, in its fashion. That and more with Patrick Poole of PJ Media, straight ahead.
go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
It's been over 7 years since a church group from another state brought a couple hundred refugees to the rural county where I live. I wanted to know, how could they do this? What was the governmental process that allowed the resettlement of refugees to a county ill-prepared to assimilate them? Employment opportunities were scarce. The health department was not familiar with illnesses and mental health problems of people who came from parts of the third world. The school system was not prepared to teach large numbers of students who didn't speak English.
That's author Ann Corcoran discussing her new book, Federal Immigration Policy, Resettlement and the Hijra to America. She explains how Muslim immigrants are being quietly resettled into American towns without vetting them, even for terrorist links. Corcoran also explains how the global jihad movement is using immigration as a stealth campaign to spread its influence in America. You can read Federal Immigration Policy, Resettlement, and the Hijra to America on securefreedom.org or purchase a copy on amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
I'm Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. One of President Obama's worst foreign policy failings is the lack of a strategy to defeat Al-Qaeda and ISIS. These terrorist groups are part of a global movement to establish Islamic supremacy and Sharia through violence. This movement is called the Global Jihad Movement. It will not be defeated without a strategy that recognizes its true nature. In January 2015, we issued a comprehensive strategy to defeat the global jihad movement. It is called the Secure Freedom Strategy and is based on National Security Directive 75, the strategy that President Ronald Reagan used to defeat the global totalitarian threat of his time, the Soviet Union. Like President Reagan's strategy, we lay out a comprehensive plan on how the United States government can be reorganized and focused to understand and defeat the global jihad movement. You can read the Secure Freedom Strategy at securefreedom.org, or you can purchase a copy on amazon.com. I'm Fred Fleitz.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anniesoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined for a second very, very important part of this conversation with Patrick Poole, a national security reporter, really an investigative journalist as much as anything, now with the splendid online publication PJ Media. Patrick, we were talking about this whole construct of countering violent extremism, the CVE, as it's known in bureaucraties in Washington. This emanates really at its core from the problem you were touching about just before the break, namely a misunderstanding on the part of the administration, willful or otherwise, of the nature of the enemy and contracting out, as you put it, to some of those in the hostile camp, the responsibility for sort of defining what we know and what we say and what we do about it. Explore that with us, if you would. It seems unbelievable.
Well, and Frank, this whole countering violent extremism narrative was developed with the assistance of the top Muslim Brotherhood figures here in the United States. I mean, Muhammad Najib, the president of the Islamic Society of North America, who at last report was not even a U.S. citizen, was on the Department of Homeland Security's Countering Violent Extremism Working Group, who created these standards, along with Mohammed Ali Biari, the now disgraced the Homeland Security advisor, Omar Alamari, who was fired from Ohio Homeland Security for lying about his background. And these folks are the ones who really established this countering violent extremism narrative, and you start scratching at the paint on this so-called CVE, and you find that, it's a complete dead end. I mean, it's utter meaninglessness. You know, what's violent extremism? What's extremism? Well, you know, it turns out that it's, you know, that you actually believe something.
But the other piece of this, of course, Patrick, is that this construct has allowed, and I think you're right, it's a brilliant influence operation on the part of the Muslim Brotherhood, but it essentially establishes very explicitly not just moral equivalency, but kind of equivalency with respect to the threat and the need to counter it between, conservatives and constitutionalists and Tea Party activists and the like with these jihadists. This really seems as though it's not just throwing sand in our eyes, it's throwing monkey wrenches in the works of trying to actually protect the American people against threats, foreign and domestic.
Well, and certainly it's because we see the use of CVE, of targeting constitutionally protected activity and ideas, you know, like the Tea Party and other entities, you know, Ron Paul supporters and people who, you know, have Gadsden flag bumper stickers on their car, identified as threats by Homeland Security and various fusion centers. You know, and meanwhile, we have this rapidly metastasizing threat in our midst and also overseas that I think I hearken back to the New York Times article at the end of last year, at the end of December 2014, where General Nagata, the head of Special Operations Command, I mean, this the man who's leading our forces that are literally the tip of the spear in fighting these threats abroad, and he admitted candidly that they had no understanding of the nature of the threat. And we've seen nothing since then, since that, you know, candid admission. We've seen no changes, and in fact, what we've seen is the increase of the very thing, the CVE narrative, that's not working. And we see the State Department, under the leadership of Rashad Hussein, setting up now a counter-radicalization strategic narrative center in the United Arab Emirates. So, as we talked about in the previous segment with Quentin Witkowitz, the president's advisor on this stuff, saying, well, it's unconstitutional for us to look at the threat doctrine of our enemies in this case, so we have to outsource it. Now we see that the State Department, under guys like Rashad Hussein, are doing exactly that. And, again, these are countries that have failed as well to do anything to stem this threat. And as you mentioned, in many cases, the UAE was one of the most active supporters of the whole abetted moderate Syrian rebels nonsense, which has just completely collapsed.
Yeah. Patrick Poole, let me ask you, this is such an alarming story you've painted here. Rashad Hussein, of course, is a man that we profiled in our course, Muslim Brotherhood in America, with extensive ties himself to the Muslim Brotherhood. This isn't just an advisor to the president. This is his so-called special envoy to the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. It really does sound as though this government has been deeply penetrated and is now at the mercy, really, of the influence operations and information dominance of our adversaries. Is Cameron's speech this week a signal to you that there's a sea change taking place, at least across the pond, that might be worth emulating? Or is he still carrying forward the narrative that he, among others, have promoted, including, of course, President Obama, that we're not at war with Islam and that this ideology has nothing to do with Islam and so on, which seems, again, sort of self-defeating?
Well, I think that Cameron's speech is an indication of the shift in public opinion that we're seeing in Europe right now, against this threat. And it still remains to be seen exactly how this, new policy prescription is going to actually be played out. But, we have seen the UK abandon their prevent strategy, which was, just catastrophic, which was the very strategy we've adopted here in the United States.
The model for it, exactly. Hey, Patrick, quickly, before we run out of time, I just want to turn to another topic. And again, you have done such incredible work in investigating these operations of the Muslim Brotherhood. Talk about specifically, if you would, the role of mosques in America, whether it's the ones in Tennessee that this guy, apparently Abdulaziz, hung with, or the Islamic Society of Boston that the Sarnaev brothers and many others were engaged with. What role do they play, these mosques, in the Muslim Brotherhood's so-called civilization jihad strategy for destroying us from within by our own hands?
Well, Frank, we only have to look to the Muslim Brotherhood's own documents, such as the 1991 explanatory memorandum, where they say that Islamic centers are the center of gravity for their movement here in the United States. And, you mentioned the Islamic Society of Boston and the dozen terrorists that have come out of that, and some hardcore. Ahmed Abu Samra, who was the head of the Islamic State's social media efforts and was involved in making these extremely graphic beheading videos of Americans and other Westerners. His father was a top official for the mosque and was just killed by, United States airstrike. And we have the mosque in Phoenix, where the Garland attackers there in early May came out of, and turned out that the FBI was aware of at least one of those Garland attempted attackers because he was caught up in a prior terror cell that was also operating there inside the mosque going back to 2006.
Yeah, these are what you've called, Patrick Poole, correctly, the known wolves that we're up against. And it is just appalling, I think, for reasons that you've just amply established, that we are so ignorant of the reality and so willfully blind as to what its implications are. You are a very important counterweight to all of that, Patrick Poole at PJ Media. I appreciate you taking some time with us to talk these things through and look forward to your further reporting on all of these issues and your visit again with us in the very near future. I look forward to talking to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.